We're pleased to have joining us in the studios for the very first time a political science professor from the University of Maine system, Rob Glover, on the Pulse Morning Show. Rob, how are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. You're very welcome. You're very welcome. We appreciate you taking the time. It was as a direct result of an op-ed, a piece that you had submitted, the BDN. Now, is this your blog all the time, research shows?
Yeah, so there's a group of faculty in Maine, at part of a larger national network called the Scholar Strategy Network.
Yes.
And we have there's a blog through the BDN, and we also have a biweekly slot in which our opinion pieces based on our research and our expertise appear in the Bangor Daily News. And so this was just kind of our weekly slot. My expertise is in immigration policy, and so that's what it focused on this week.
Now, wait a second. You're providing opinion based on things like facts and research. that must be anathema to many in political arenas today.
Yeah, it's I think it fills a need. There's only so much you can gain from shouting and appealing to people's base emotions. So that's really our goal is to bring some of the research and the expertise that's happening at our universities and our scholars are studying these things and have expertise in these areas, and figure out how to communicate it to people, the citizens, media, policymakers. So that's what we try to do with that.
And I can appreciate the notion that it is a significant challenge to get information out there into the public arena without having it somewhat significantly discounted based upon the source by a fairly significant portion of the population. You know, it's this tremendous sort of polarization of the political spectrum that we've seen, and here in Maine we've seen that really ramped up to a much more significant extent over the course of time that I guess we'll refer to it as the LePage year.
Yeah, I remember the first piece I ever wrote for a paper in which it was just going out to the general public. I'd written a piece about immigration. I wasn't in Maine. I was in Virginia. I taught there for a year. And I remember somebody sending me an email after I had written the piece. It was about immigration. And they said, well, it's great that you have all this knowledge, but I have a degree in life. And it's like, well, so do I. You don't know my lived experience, right? And so, I come from a working class background. I probably have had some of the same experiences you have. But there is a disconnect. And people do sometimes discredit things because it's, eggheads in the ivory tower. And really what this network of folks in Maine and nationwide is trying to do is move past that, right? We have expertise. Everyday people have expertise too. We can talk about these issues and we can learn about them. We don't have to be, nervous or hostile towards facts. Yes. And having conversations about difficult issues.
Yes. And there needs to be a recognition and understanding that facts are just that. And, we are not entitled to our own. And that's been a real significant problem in the news cycle and in the political arena, and it seems to be getting worse as opposed to getting better.
Yeah, there are certain things you can improvise on, but you can't improvise on the truth, right?
Yeah. Indeed. And with regard to that, you mentioned your expertise with regard to immigration policy.
Yeah.
This announcement from Jeff Sessions that the Trump administration going to end DACA. That is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. 800,000 people immediately impacted by this. Who are these people?
Yeah, so there's actually kind of a little bit of history that's interesting with regard to DACA. So in the 1990s, there was kind of a ramping up of our border security on the southern land border. And so previously, you had people who would come to the United States in order to work illegally. I mean, they would cross the border illegally. And there was kind of this like cycle of immigration. And because border security was more lax than it became, they could move back and forth relatively easily. And so it was mostly just men coming to the United States. They would work for a certain period of time. They would go back to their families. And so in the 1990s, we really stepped up border enforcement. And the incentives around coming to the United States illegally changed. And so all of a sudden, people are migrating with their families. They would bring their families with them, and it didn't make sense for them to go back and forth across the border 5 or 6 times in a 10-year period anymore. They would go and they would bring their family and they would stay. And so you had a lot of children who were brought to the United States with their families, who were, you know, 4 years old, 5 years old, and then stayed and actually couldn't travel in and out of the United States because border enforcement was a lot stricter than it was. And so we ended up with this enormous population of people who came here as children, no fault of their own, you know, decisions of their parents. And all of a sudden, in the early 2000s, we realized these people can't work legally. They can't go to school. Some of them want to join the military, and they can't do that. And it became a real policy issue that they tried to solve in Congress, ultimately weren't able to. And 11 years later, you know, in 2012, we ended up with Barack Obama's DACA executive order.
Yes. With regard to that executive order, one of the things that you brought to the table in the piece that you've run here, and we'll share a link on our Facebook page. It is the Pulse AM 620 on Facebook. Was startling to me, reading directly from your piece. DACA, implemented by President Barack Obama in 2012 to precisely articulate our immigration enforcement priorities. The Obama administration, and this must just blow the minds of the most hardcore conservatives, the Obama administration was responsible for record numbers of deportations, but focused on those with felony convictions, gang affiliations, or ties to espionage or terrorism. This was a shift from the wide enforcement net cast by the Bush administration, most notably with its controversial high-profile workplace raids. I witnessed some of those raids actually happen at places right here in the state of Maine. Suddenly you've got immigrations and customs enforcement and border patrol rolling in, you know, lights blaring, sirens blazing, hitting a Chinese buffet restaurant in Waterville, Maine. You know, grabbing people and hauling them out in numbers. And I found myself thinking, I don't recall there being any particular uptick in, you know, violent criminal behavior associated with the Chinese buffet. How important is it for people to gain this understanding and do away with some of the misconceptions that Barack Obama was, in fact, kicking open some sort of floodgate and seeing this massive influx of immigrants? It's just not the reality.
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember with Obama that he had originally campaigned on the idea that he was going to pass comprehensive immigration reform in his first year in office. So he said, you know, 2009, we're going to have a package and we're going to get it done. And so immigrant advocacy groups supported him on that basis, and then he did not deliver. He got hung up with healthcare, and ultimately, like, it never happened. They finally had a package in 2013 immigration reform, but it didn't pass. And he was really controversial, both for not getting that done, and then he did deport record numbers of people. And so there are a lot, in the kind of progressive immigrant advocacy community that view him very negatively for what he was not able to accomplish and how harshly he went after folks and deported folks. But it was a change in the nature of enforcement. You're very right that it was more targeted. And part of what DACA was designed to do was very clearly articulate to those executive agencies that are charged with immigration enforcement that these folks are not our priority, right? People who have criminal records are our priority. People who might have links to terrorism are our priority. But the folks that are here and came here as children and now are trying to work, trying to get an education, those folks need to be at the very, very bottom of our list of priorities. And I think one of the dangerous things about the rescinding DACA is that those priorities are no longer clear. Trump had said in a tweet these folks are not our priorities. Unfortunately, ICE agents and Border Patrol agents that's a very unclear guide to how they do their jobs.
So. Yeah, exactly. We're speaking with UMaine political science professor Rob Glover about DACA right now. When you take a look at that and what happened in the immediate aftermath of that tweet from the president, you begin to understand that this is not policymaking at its finest. It isn't even policymaking.
It's not. It's essentially, you know, what it was kicking the ball over into the court of Congress and saying, okay, you've got 6 months, right? It does not end immediately. There's kind of a 6 month phase out. And actually they're trying to get something done by October 5th, because that's the final day in which people who currently have a 2 year work permit under the DACA program can apply for an extension. So it doesn't end immediately, but basically, you know, what he said was, All right, this is going to end in 6 months. We're going to, some elements we're going to phase out now. The ball's in your court, Congress, get it done. And if we don't do this in 6 months, I will revisit this issue. The executive branch will revisit this, which is so bizarre because the whole justification for why this was wrong and needed to be rescinded was that it was an overreach of the executive authority. So the idea that he's going to revisit this in 6 months is, you know, it just kind of calls into question that whole justification. So the goal then was, you know, kick this over into the court of Congress and have them try to reach some sort of solution in the next 6 months.
We had a conversation just a week ago today with Sue Roche. She's the executive director of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project here in the state of Maine. Mm. She said that there was a significant number of people here in the state of Maine immediately and directly impacted. She said it's difficult to get a true handle on that number. And that's really one of the major problems here, because when you have this this sort of situation unfold, you've got some people who are scurrying to get themselves out of sight. And we're talking about people who have, as you suggested, been here for, you know, a decade or more, people who have made every effort to become, you know, productive members of American society, to be, you know, as good a citizen as they can be. They recognize exactly the opportunities that they are afforded here that they simply would not receive in the land that may have been their original home.
Yeah, I think what's really remarkable is that you have this program. People know that it is an executive order, so it's not, you know, it's not a piece of law. It could be overturned if there's a change in who is president. And you did have 800 or, you know, 780,000 people come forward. They give their information to the government. They essentially register with the government. So now the government has their information. And that means that, you know, they are making every effort to do things above board legally to solidify their status. And now those people, really starting October 5th. So October 5th is the point at which, if some sort of resolution is not reached through the Congress, that people's work permits will start to expire and they will not be able to renew them. And so then those folks, the Department of Homeland Security has already kind of put out some memos that say those people need to start preparing to return home, which, so there are people that are not going to return home. They're going to kind of blend into the shadows and disappear. And we're going to have to try to, you know, find them when we eventually do reach some sort of resolution. So the October 5th deadline is crucial, and Congress really needs to work hard to try and resolve that. And there has been some forward motion on that front.
Yeah. What can we look to? What is encouraging there? You mentioned some forward motion. Is it in the right direction?
Well, it's there's a number of proposals right now. There has been a lot that has happened in just the past few days, and it's, I was actually, you know, out in the parking lot checking Twitter to see if something had happened between, you know, when I fell asleep and when I came in this morning. So there's a number of proposals in Congress. Some of them are part of larger packages for immigration reform. Mm-hmm. Dick Durbin, who was the original sponsor of the DREAM Act all the way back in 2001, which was a bill that would have introduced some sort of, you know, legislative resolution to this issue 16 years ago.
16 years.
Yeah. Wow. If the DREAM Act were a person, it would actually be eligible for DACA status. That's how long this has been going on.
Unbelievable.
So there's at least four proposals, probably more than that now, that are rolling around Congress. What is really weird, and what happened just on Wednesday night, is that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer had a dinner with Donald Trump, apparently ostensibly to talk about Chinese trade. And so, of course, they ate Chinese food.
At the White House.
And there were a lot of other folks there. I guess there were 11 people in the room. And Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer came out of that meeting saying, "We've got a deal. We have a deal on the DREAM Act. Donald Trump says he will sign it. It does not include funding for a border wall. And it is pretty much just kind of a clean passage of the DREAM Act. And it actually includes a path to citizenship for these folks," which is one of the components of the original DREAM Act, is that after 6 years, these people would be eligible to potentially gain American citizenship.
Yes.
And so everybody said, "Wow, you know, that was unexpected." Unfortunately, the Republican leadership in Congress hadn't been alerted to that. So people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell said, "We hope that Donald Trump understands that he can't simply meet with the Democrats and leave the party that controls a majority in both houses out of the conversation." And then almost immediately, certain folks in the White House started to walk back those claims. They said, oh, there was no guarantee that this wouldn't be tied to funding for a border wall. The border wall is not out. This is an agreement in principle. We don't have a deal yet, and this will include significant border enforcement. So whatever was agreed to is very much in flux, and it's not clear exactly yet what has emerged from those conversations. But at least in principle, it seems as if Donald Trump is working directly with the Democrats and shutting out the Republicans, which may be a step forward, but may just enrage the Republicans and actually make this process harder.
Yeah, I mean, it could create a situation where they just firmly entrench themselves and refuse to make any sort of significant movement.
Yeah, and some of the harder line Republicans on immigration have already dug in.
Yes.
Saying he has betrayed his base, he is completely disillusioned and angered the folks that elected him on being harsh on immigration policy. And now that he's working hand in hand with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, it's just a betrayal of everything that he ran on. So we'll see. It's very hard to tell.
Rob, what can listeners do? I mean, is there anything that the average Joe or the average Jane can do to have some level of impact here? I mean, I think people, when they hear the arguments that you put forward with regard to why we need to see DACA continue, why we need to see the DREAM Act finally, some 16 plus years on, come to fruition, people can understand, but what can they do? It's not like we have a vote in Congress, you know?
Yeah.
But we do in a way.
Yeah. So I think what the very first thing that I would encourage listeners to do is contact their congressional representatives. We have some good congressional representatives in Maine. We have some folks who are nationally recognized for their sensible approach to policy issues. And just talk to their staffers and let them know that this is a serious issue and needs to be resolved. And needs to be resolved ideally before October 5th, before we start to see a wave of people whose lives are just thrown into chaos. The other thing that I would suggest, the folks protected by DACA are kind of interesting because you might not realize that they are, in fact, immigrants. You might not know that these people are protected by DACA. So if you work at, a larger place, or like I work at the University of Maine, I'm really interested in what will our institutional policies be if this federal policy changes, right? And so how are we going to protect the people who are here under DACA if all of a sudden that goes away? I'm sure we have students who are undocumented and who have been afforded an opportunity to get an education by this executive program of DACA. So, you almost have to kind of be proactive and prepare for what will our institution or our workplace or, the places where we have a voice more directly, what will they be doing if this is not resolved through Congress?
Rob Glover, an associate professor of political science at the University of Maine. We're kind of coming up against the clock here, Rob, but you told me a story about having received notice hey, guess what? You are a professor, sir, and you're going to be sticking around for a while. That just struck me, and I've found myself relating that story again and again in the weeks since you first shared it with me. Where were you exactly? If we were to bust up the Google Earth, where were you when you got a heads up from the university?
Heads up.
Yeah. I was on a rock in the middle of the Pacific Ocean called Easter Island.
Wow.
So I taught last year for a semester in Santiago, Chile. And Santiago is one of the few airports, I think it's the only airport in the world where you can fly directly to Easter Island. So I spent a week there when they had their spring break and assumed I would not have internet access. Go figure, there's a giant satellite dish on Easter Island that gets you very bad internet access and cell access. So I actually got this notification while I was in the middle of nowhere, standing next to a 30-foot Moai statue that I had received tenure. So
I got to tell you, I am incredibly jealous. and don't take this the wrong way when I say my incredible jealousy stems more from the fact that you were standing on Easter Island next to a 30-foot tall Moai statue and not so much the tenure at the University of Maine. That's such an incredible story. I appreciate you taking the time to come in here this morning, man. This is the sort of information that we want our listeners to have. We want them to avail themselves to so that they can gain a better understanding of issues attendant to immigration right now, because this constant ginning up of discontent for the purposes of having an angry mob at the disposal of a particular political interest has got to stop. Yeah. It's got to stop.
Yeah, I agree.
We appreciate your time, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
I hope you can come back soon.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks, Tom.